The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Tommy's here. I am here on this Thursday heading into another big football weekend. The show, as always, is presented by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Their latest deal offers you up to 50% off on all windows with no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 years. Mention my name, you get a free estimate. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. So, Tommy, first of all, let me just remind everybody, if you missed yesterday's show, Cooley, excellent again on Sam Howell, on Eric Bieniemy, third down defense, did a lot of film prep. And, you know, he is still encouraged that Sam can work his way out of what was, you know, an awful game on Sunday. But there's a lot of really good stuff in there, including some suggestions on what they should be helping Sam with on dropbacks in particular. But anyway, so go listen to it if you haven't listened to the show from yesterday. So Tommy, right before we started to record today, I don't know that you did this, and I probably should have told you to go watch it, or at least, because the transcript's not out. I watched the Eric Bieniemy press conference from earlier today.
Well, I followed some of the comments that people posted on Twitter.
What were people saying?
Well, you know, where he said, I didn't even know we had 9 sacks in the game.
He did say that. No, he said, I didn't know that we had 19 sacks. That's true. He did say that.
19 sacks. I didn't know we had 19 sacks.
On the season.
And it's my job to clean up the shit.
Yes, he said that.
But look at this team. This team seems to do losing very well. They said all the right things this week.
Well, Ron says too much. He talks too much. We talked about that the other day. But
the quarterback said all the right things yesterday.
Oh, he was
really spoke well.
Beauty. Took all the handled it like you know, a leader handles it. Took all the blame, made no excuses. But Tommy, you just gotta go watch Eric Bieniemy today. It's 15 minutes. Every question, all the specific questions, are basically answered the same way. We didn't play well collectively. We got to get it together, but we got another opportunity, and we're going to figure out a way to drag ourselves over the goal line. Eric Bieniemy is responsible for it. We're in it all together, and I love the way we fought, and we get another chance, and it's going to be better. But we're going to find a way to drag ourselves over the finish line. And collectively, it was we collectively, and then only. I mean, this was the brilliance of it, because Eric Bieniemy is taking these questions now. He did it in Kansas City last year too on Coordinator Day, but he did it with a great team where they're really, and it's Kansas City, by the way. There's not a lot of pointed questions probably more often than not when your team's drilling the opponent week in and week out. And, you know, the questions were, what about run-pass balance? What can you do to protect Sam a little bit? By the way, then the mic on the questions went out. He didn't bite on anything. Every answer was, we just didn't play good. We just weren't very good. And you, sometimes you just have a bad day. But collectively, I love the way we hung together, and we're hanging there together. We're hanging together this week. I don't know, other than just referring to Sam as a young quarterback who is seeing things for the, like, he keeps using the same line where he says, you guys understand that sometimes when he sees something, he's seeing something for the first time. He was asked about Brian Robinson Jr. Brian Robinson Jr., here's the one thing I know about Brian Robinson Jr. after that game. We didn't win the game, and he's not happy. Brian Robinson wouldn't – he'd trade everything because we collectively – he didn't – there wasn't one moment where you could have said, ooh, maybe he thinks that, you know, Andrew Wiley really needs to get it together, or the offensive line as a group needs to get it together. Uh-uh. I mean, Ron yesterday pretty much said that Emmanuel Forbes is kind of struggling here early with his technique. You know, Ron the other day said the defense was basically, you know, spooked by Josh Allen or whatever it was that he, however he described that.
He was in their heads.
In their heads. He was in their heads. Eric Bieniemy, it was a masterpiece in not answering any of the questions for 15 minutes. I kept saying as I'm watching this, I'm like, this is impressive. Like, this is legitimately impressive what he is doing. Now, I told you the mic went out on the questions, so, but you could tell because he was sitting there waiting for some of the answers. When I get the transcript, I'll see kind of what the general question was. But they were long. Some of them were long, and I heard the questions. And you know, some of them were coming back kind of long. Like Ben asked a question towards the end, something about essentially saying, "What do you use, good or bad, whether it's they're playing well or not playing well, to sort of measure offensive line performance?" We just had a bad day on Sunday. Sometimes you have a bad day on Sunday, but we collectively got through it. I love the way our guys got across the finish line. We're dragging each other over the finish line, and we're going to do it again this Sunday. I guess the only thing you could say about is the 19 sacks. He said, I didn't even know we had 19 sacks. You know, at some point, he wasn't to that question. He said, I'm not much of a numbers guy. You should know that by now. But we collectively as a team, and Eric Bieniemy is going to make sure that he improves too, because this is on me too. He did say at one point, I put together the game plan. I'm responsible for the game plan. I helped build this roster. That actually was somewhat notable, although I think we all understood that with the offensive, you know, moves that were made in the offseason, that he had a hand. I mean, Andrew Wiley and Kemp that came in and Pringle, you know, some of the Chiefs guys that came right in. So he had a hand in that. But it was impressive. Not only did he not answer a question for 15 minutes, he smiled through the entire thing. It was just, I was like, I don't know if, I think he had a, you know what? He developed the game plan for his press conference today, you know, or their PR people who are much better than they used to be said, you're going to get a lot of questions about Sam Howell. You're going to get a lot of questions about why you didn't run the football more. You're going to get a lot of questions about run pass balance. You know, you may want to get detailed, but probably the best thing to do is to do what you do best, which is talk about it was a bad day and we collectively, together as a team, are going to drag our asses over the finish line. I just, you know, it was it was impressive.
It's such a contrast to the head coach.
Oh, yes. My God, yeah. You can't get him to shut up or not talk about anything.
No. And you can get away with that when you've suffered one loss in a 2-1 record. You know? But I mean, if you're 5-8, you can't do that.
Yeah.
That won't work. But for right now, you know, I'm kind of curious about fans. I'm sure there's a segment of the fan base that's frustrated he's not answering questions. But if I was a fan, at this point, given this team's history, I would be happy with those answers.
I am.
You know?
You just mentioned me. This is what I've always said. Look, it's not good for what I do to have a Belichick kind of a response coach. It's terrible for what you do. But as a fan, you know me, and all of you that listen, I don't like to be promised anything. Show me. And show me something good on the field when it matters. And if there are tough times, you've got to be really careful. You know, and we've had coaches and assistant coaches and players and, you know, owners and co-owners. I mean, for years they've just been serving it up. But to your point, you make a very good point. 2-1, one bad game. That's fine.
Yeah.
But in big boy towns, and I would consider this to be a big boy town, it's not Philly. Like today at 2-1, Philly people wouldn't have accepted any of his answers. They would have gone after him a little bit. They would have said, but you're not answering my question. Specifically, tell me what you think about your current pass run balance of 3.5 or 4-1. Is that what you envision moving forward? You know, they would have continued to hammer him. I'm not suggesting our group isn't good because they are good. It's actually, I think, maybe the best group we've had in a long time. I know you don't necessarily always feel that way, but I think, you know, they do a good job. But we know the difference between this market and Philly, and there's a big difference between this market and Charlotte or this market in Kansas yes. City for Bieniemy. But to your point, it's not about even the record. It's about they can't repeat what happened Sunday. And he did say, the one thing he said, we'll play better. We'll play better. And we can't wait for the opportunity to go back out there. And it'd be hard to be worse.
Yes, it would.
It would be hard.
It really would be hard to be worse. I mean, if you think they're going to adjust their offense to take some of the pressure off the quarterback, that means there's going to be less opportunities for the Eagles to take the ball away, probably.
Yeah. Oh, he did say one thing. It was in the context, well, it was in the midst of, you know, we played bad, we're going to get it together and drag our asses over the finish line. But he did say something about Sam. He said, and the number of times that he's being dropped back to throw the football, he said, my quarterback needs to know that we're going to throw the football, and I've got all the confidence in the world in him throwing the football. That's a paraphrase there. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. The transcript will be out, you know, probably in a little bit. But it wasn't a remarkable quote, but what it enforces for me is kind of what Ron talked about earlier, is that, you know, there is a bigger picture long game here, and it is to see if Sam Howell can be their guy in a system that they want to be pass first. That's kind of my takeaway through three games. Now, this could change. You take a beating on Sunday against Philadelphia with 8 sacks and 2 more picks and a fumble, and you lose 34-14. Then Ron's going to say, okay, we got to start running the football because the last 2 years, let me show you what happened when we started to run the football. We actually started to win games and we got ourselves into the hunt.
Actually, that would be the wrong time to do it because you got the Bears coming to town the week after.
Yeah. Well, it's not the week after. It's four nights after. Yeah, Thursday night football.
Yeah, Thursday night football. So that would be the time to go ahead and let it fly, baby.
Yeah, they play the Bears, by the way, for people that don't know, 1 week from tonight. 1 week from tonight, Washington plays Thursday night football against the Bears, which is exactly, I think, the exact same week and same spot they played Thursday night football last year. Wasn't it week 5? Maybe in week 6, I forget.
That memorable 12-10 win? I think it was 12-10.
No, it was twelve to seven. I think it was
12-7.
I think it was 12-7. And now that I think about it, I think the Tennessee game, which was the game the week before, 4 days earlier, where Wentz got picked off at the goal line as they were about to win the game, and that dropped them to 1-4. So it would have been week 6 that they played Chicago. Week 6. Were they 1-3 after that game or 1-4? Whatever. Who cares? Anyway, I was impressed with that. I mean, you're right, though. You can't have another game like Sunday. If your quarterback gets sacked that many times and he's getting beat up like he got, you're going to have to then answer why you're not doing something to protect him.
Yeah.
But he was impressive today. Jack Del Rio, by the way, I wanted to mention this real quickly because it came up right at the end of the radio show today. Jack Del Rio was asked about the Eagles, you know, tush-push play. You know what the tush-push play is, right? The third and one, fourth and one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're basically their quarterback sneak version.
Exactly. So Del Rio said, I think all of you know what the play is. It's when Jalen Hurts gets under center and they get two tight ends and a running back and they push him forward. And Jalen Hurts, by the way, has probably the strongest lower body of any quarterback in the NFL. He may be the strongest quarterback in the NFL, period. So Del Rio was asked about the play and he said, quote, "I don't think it's a football play. It's a rugby play." But then he noted, "It's legal, and therefore we've got to figure out how to play that play until the rule is changed." I think there's going to be a rule change on this. And I'm kind of pissed at myself for not being more emphatic about it in the offseason, because I think when it came up during the offseason, I just said, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's you can do it. You can push runners in the open field, and they figured out a way to do it, and I don't know if you can, you know. And by the way, not everybody's successful all the time using it. Jalen Hurts is a big part of why that's successful. He's got such a strong lower body and strong legs, and then he gets pushed on top of that, and he's probably, you know, as a guy that's been a running quarterback, he probably has a way of getting into the proper crease or whatever to get pushed even more easily. But anyway, I think I have the answer to this. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, Mr. Answer Man. Please tell me what your solution is.
Okay. So, first of all, do you agree that it's a play that needs to be outlawed? I think football's not meant to be third and one, fourth and one, and it be like a 98% play, which I think it's been with the Eagles. And again, not every team has made all of them, but it's not what quarterback sneak, fine, but having a bunch of players push the quarterback for the sneak, I don't think that's really football, personally. I think they're going to change the rule, and I think they should change the rule. Do you agree or not?
I don't have a problem with it. I don't see a lot of other teams doing it. So until it becomes an epidemic throughout the league, I don't think they'll change it.
All right, so here's the solution if they decide to change it. The solution is simple. You're not allowed to push a runner behind the line of scrimmage. That's a penalty. See, right now, you are allowed to push a runner at any point. You are not allowed to pull a runner. So in an open field run, if an offensive lineman's blocking in front of a runner and a runner starts to get tackled, the offensive lineman can't grab the offensive runner, his teammate, and pull him over the goal line or pull him for extra yardage to get a first down. You can't pull a runner, but you can push. We see it all the time. Sometimes they'll blow the whistle and call forward progress, but a lot of time they let it go, and you'll see offensive linemen with a running back, you know, that gets stopped at like the 2-yard line, and all of a sudden here come three big linemen from behind him, and they push him into the end zone. That I'm not talking about outlawing. What I am talking about outlawing is you can't do that behind the line of scrimmage. First of all, you'll never have that issue with offensive linemen behind the line of scrimmage because they're in front of the runners, whether it's the quarterback or the running backs. They're already in front of the runners. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to say, "I'm not blocking the guy in front of me. I'm going to run behind the quarterback and push him." So you're taking the tight ends and the running backs and a wide receiver, whatever, and you're saying you can't push the quarterback or you can't push a running back from behind the line of scrimmage. If you make it a penalty to push a runner behind the line of scrimmage, that's easy to enforce. It's harder to enforce if you outlaw pushing a runner altogether. Because in the open field in particular, when a runner has already crossed the line of scrimmage or is out on the flank, lots of times blockers are out there just trying to block. And they end up, you know, pushing the runner. And it's not intentional. And so then you're getting into a very subjective area sometimes. If you make it, you know, you have a line of demarcation. It's the line of scrimmage. If a runner gets pushed, gets helped with a push from behind the line of scrimmage, it's a penalty, period. And that'll end all the quarterback sneak stuff and anything else that happens behind the line of scrimmage. That's the solution, I think. I haven't thought it out completely.
I don't see it. As a problem other than an Eagles problem.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I don't think the league's going to be taking it up.
It's happening everywhere in football. It's happening college. It's happening high school.
It doesn't happen in Washington.
No, they have not employed that play. You're right. Other teams have, though. Lots of other teams have. And I don't know what the success rates are with other teams. I do know that the Eagles' success rate, they've like missed once doing this, maybe twice. It's like in the mid-90 percentile on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1. I bet you, I would make a healthy wager this play gets outlawed. And I think, because you didn't respond to this, but I'll pat myself on the back, I figured out the way to get this out of the game. Okay. So, I wanted to read... Yesterday on the radio show, we did a segment, Tommy, where I said, tell me through three games what you've been most encouraged by. And we got a lot of calls. We took calls for like, I don't know, two or three segments. And I got a lot of tweets. I got a lot of emails on this. And my answer on through the first three games, what I'm most encouraged with is Deron Payne is having a great season already, three games into it, and it's very obvious that this isn't going to be one of those seasons where he got paid and then took a step back. And I'm not only encouraged by that, because a lot of people did wonder whether or not it was smart to give Deron all that money after he performed and had his best year in a contract year. And I said, no, you got to pay him, because by all accounts, this is a high-character guy, and he just had his best season because he's just getting better. And now he's about to enter the prime years of his career. So that, to me, was number one on my list of things that I was most encouraged by. A lot of people said Sam Howell. Before I read a couple of emails in response to this, do you have an answer to the question? What's been the most encouraging thing to you about the first three games? And I'm talking about football.
You know, I know. It's so hard to really come up with that coming off that 37-3 loss, you know, which is like 33% of the season right now. So it's hard to really feel, to make a judgment, to be encouraged about anything. But since I didn't have any expectations about Sam Howell and what he did in Denver, even though the Broncos are a very suspect team, it's still a hard place to play. And this was a young quarterback coming back from a 21-3 deficit, that he showed me things that he was capable of that I didn't know if he was capable of them or not. So I'm going to say Sam Howell.
So what are the things that he showed you that you didn't know he was capable of?
Well, that he doesn't fold under pressure. I mean, 21-3.
Figurative pressure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he doesn't. The moment is not too big for him in that sense. He made all the throws. He was on the money with a lot of throws. Again, I know it's the Broncos and they just gave up 70 points to maybe the best team in the league in the Dolphins. But unlike everybody else who's a quarterback visionary, I had no vision of Sam Howell.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, he didn't do anything in the Dallas game to make me think that he was a starting NFL quarterback, and he certainly didn't do anything in the Cardinals game to make me believe that. I'm more willing to believe it after the Denver game. And I think the Buffalo game, in part, I don't even want to use the word. I'm not going to use the word F-A-U-L-T. I'm not going to use that. I'm sick of hearing about it, okay? No matter what happened to him in the Buffalo game, I'm still willing to believe that he has the tools, given the right opportunities, as Ron Rivera likes to say, to be an NFL quarterback.
By the way, is this a column coming about?
Oh no.
About fault, because if you're talking about just the obsessive conversation about sacks and who's at fault, you're talking about that specifically, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. It gets a bit
absolutely.
Much.
You know what? Everybody, it's my fault. I'm the reason.
Yeah, I think it's a column. So. You know, Cooley said the same thing yesterday. He said, I haven't lost hope after that game. There's still some things that he's shown me that are very, you know, encouraging. And I agree with that. And I also, as you know, I agree with it's okay to not know. Okay, it was okay to not know over the summer, and it's still okay to not know after three games. A lot of people seem to know, bless your hearts. So with that, let me get to some of the follow-up that I got from this segment. From Samuel, like your caller just said, I had a couple of callers yesterday who said, Sam, by far and away, is the most encouraging thing. Like your caller said, I'm not flinching on Sam. I have no issues with what happened in the Bills game. I've seen the good, and he's smart enough to fix the bad. He's got what it takes to be our franchise quarterback. Give it time. From Chuck, I'm most encouraged by Sam. Nothing I've seen so far worries me. He's going to be a good one for us, Kev. Think Joe T, as in Joe Theismann. Whoa, hold on, Chuck. We're talking about Joe T here. You know, the Belichick Lawrence Taylor thing. Hey, we're talking about Lawrence Taylor now. You know, let's put the brakes on it here. Not that Joe T is Lawrence Taylor, but look, to me, it's totally reasonable for Samuel or anybody else to say, hey, I'm not flinching on Sam. I've seen the good. He's smart enough to fix the bad. He's got what it takes to be our franchise quarterback. Give it time. That's a reasonable take. I mean, I don't have to agree with all of it, but it's not unreasonable. From Chuck, I'm most encouraged by Sam. Okay, he's going to be good for us, Kev. Think Joe T. Okay, whatever. You're entitled to your opinion. But when Samuel says, I've got no issues with what happened in the Bills game, and Chuck says, nothing I've seen so far worries me.
Oh, yeah.
What are you talking about? Are you guys, I mean, you've got to stop this. Of course you should have an issue with what happened in the Bills game. Of course you should be worried or concerned about what you saw in the Bills game. This wasn't your run-of-the-mill bad game. It's the first time it's happened in 28 years. And I saw the Denver game. I saw the Buffalo game. I saw the Arizona game. I'm not willing to bail yet. I've seen some good things, as Tommy just described. That Denver game's in my memory bank. Now, what happened to them in Miami on Sunday really does put a little bit of an asterisk next to this.
Yes, it does.
But we came in here, and a week ago we were talking about, wow, those were some high-level plays, some next-level reads and then throws and taking some shots after the throws and making plays. And I loved the plays he made in the Arizona game. Now, I think the overall effort was a C effort, but the off-schedule touchdown pass to Robinson Jr., the off-schedule touchdown run to give him the lead. So there are definitely things there, but you've got to stop with you've got it all figured out. It's okay to say you don't know. And in the process of saying you don't know, you can say, I've liked some things that I've seen, and I really do think and believe in some of those things that I've seen. But the reason I don't know is because what I saw on Sunday. I mean, Samuel and Chuck, did you not watch the game on Sunday? Or are you blind? Because I was sitting here a week ago saying, really liked a lot of what I saw, but it's just one game. We've got to give this time. It's going to be up and down. It's, you know, the Arizona not so great, Denver really good. Let's see what happens against, you know, the Bills, as Tommy referred to them as the varsity. Well, what we saw was an abject disaster. I don't care if the offensive line played poorly. I don't care if the defense couldn't get off the field in third down. Eric Bieniemy, the defense, the offensive line, when you're down 37-0 in an NFL game, everybody's responsible for it. Yeah. But Sam's responsibility was tops. He threw four bad interceptions. He missed, as Cooley pointed out. Cooley's film breakdown focused on the interceptions more than the sacks. I think he's gotten sick of whose fault is it? He added into the conversation is some of those sacks were coverage sacks, because for the first time in the three games, everybody was covered. People weren't getting open. What was I going to say? Oh, Cooley suggested that the coaches may actually be concerned the most with things that didn't show up statistically. And he pointed out that there was a 2nd and 8 on their second drive. And he said, this is the easiest pre-snap read. This is too easy. They're in cover 2. You see the split safeties. It totally eliminates the throw he ends up making. And that's probably the thing that they're going to spend time on. Like, what are you looking at? What are you seeing? Because he's like, you cannot, against that look, throw the out to Dotson or McLaurin. And he missed him, and it was incomplete. But he's like, that's a pick six a lot of the time, or it's a near pick six. He's like, every quarterback sees the split safeties and knows that the throw is in the seams. And he threw it outside. And then he also had a really hard time with the first interception, the 3rd and 19. He's like, how does he not see that the linebacker's dropping into the area that means can't throw it here? Not to mention, it's 3rd and 19 and you're in field goal range, so you can't take the sack. And Bates is wide open for the easy check down, and it should have been in his mind before the ball was snapped that his tight end's going to be open on the check down, throw it to him, let's get 10, 12 yards, let's kick the field goal and tie it up. He said those two are probably as concerning to him, because he and I also talked after the recording. I forget how much of this is in the show yesterday and not in the show. But he said, I guarantee you this is something that they are spending as much time on as they are the sacks and the interceptions, because they're just simple, basic reads. So he's thrown a little bit more into the conversation about the bad on Sunday. But how can you not have at least an ounce of, maybe he's not the guy? Because I got to tell you, if you don't think there's a chance that he's not the guy, you really are so easy. I mean, just way too easy. That has to give any halfway objective person the game on Sunday a reason to say, got to see more, because if it's that, he ain't the guy. Obviously. And keep in mind all of those sacks. I want to emphasize this. This has been a problem for him going back to North Carolina. This is one of the reasons he dropped to the 5th round. He holds on to the ball too long. He doesn't see it as quickly, and he takes a lot of sacks. And did we think it was going to be record-breaking levels of sacks? No, nobody could have anticipated that. But it is, and that's why it's remarkable to me that at least some people don't have, quote, any issues at all with the Bills game, or nothing I've seen so far worries me. That worried me a lot on Sunday, especially coming off being optimistic after seeing them on Sunday, the previous Sunday against Denver.
That's a bad combination. Having a track record of holding on to the ball too long, being protected by a team that hasn't been able to protect their quarterback in recent memory.
Yeah.
bad combination there. You know what? You know what we haven't talked about yet? If I could just veer off the road for a second.
Please.
I don't believe I didn't remember it when we did this on Tuesday. But, you know, I was so impressed with your enthusiasm going into that Buffalo game Sunday. I mean, you were so on board, you know, that they could win this game. You know, I'm not ridiculing you. I thought, wow, he probably hasn't felt this way about a big game in a long time. Am I right?
You're right about the way I felt about the game with respect to their chances to win the game. And the funny thing is, I didn't put them in the smell test because it didn't fit the, you know, they weren't a major anti-public play. I did play them, and I played them on the money line. And all week long, you know, in so many ways, it was about their confidence level. I was on the pregame show. I'm on the pregame show every week with Hoffman and Logan Paulson on 980. And I do a hit with them. And I think I said this to them. I may have said it to somebody else. Oh, I said it to Smoot, actually, on Monday's show. The reason that I was confident is I just got this sense that this team had a lot of confidence. They had won two games. They had really played well offensively in Denver. And that was the biggest surprise of the first two games, was how explosive they were in Denver. But I said to Smoot, you know, their best players are used to winning. Not here, but John Allen and Daron Payne and Terry McLaurin and Sam Howell won a lot of games in Chapel Hill. And I just think that, you know, I just felt like Buffalo hasn't been right yet. They struggled with a really good defensive team. I guess what I'm getting at, it was more about being a football fan and having a really strong feeling about a game, and it just happened to have been the Washington game. I had a really strong feeling about Washington pulling off the upset. And I said it.
But I think
excited to a certain degree that they were 2-0 with a chance to be 3-0. I'm not going to lie about that either. I mean, I'm not as passionate as I once was, but I wanted them to be 3-0.
You were right. I watched them in the pregame warmups, and I usually watch the team in the pregame warmups, and they were demonstratively more enthusiastic in their warmups than they usually are. Players were singing, dancing, you know. I mean, you really could tell they couldn't wait to get on that field and play. I mean, it was a little bit different than their normal pregame warmup, and I just thought, you know. I mean, there was part of me that was pulling for you because I thought it was so cute how happy you were going into the game.
Oh, God. I don't know whether or not that was actually sweet
like
from your end or condescending.
That you haven't had in so long. And so I'm kind of disappointed they didn't win because, you know, I mean, were you crushed?
No. I'd be lying if I told you I was crushed. I'm not back at that level. I'm not. You know, I was more crushed that I was wrong than they lost. but don't get me wrong. I, like many of you, feel differently than I did a year ago because Dan's gone. So it's like there is a chance. And then also, to be completely honest, it's just better for me. It's better for you if they win. Yeah. Like a 3-0 start, I mean...
The conversation in this town is totally different than we've heard in a long time.
And it benefits specifically this podcast and my radio show and everybody that does a podcast or radio show writes a column. You know, this is the thing we've talked about for years. Not everybody believes us. They certainly don't believe you. They believe that you thrive on the dysfunction. And by the way, you did for many years. Thrive on the dysfunction. I'll tell you something, Tommy. We have a listener, Eric Fingerhut, on Twitter. And John Orand, of course, our good friend.
He's a very smart guy.
Yeah, Eric sends me all of the local rating stuff. I guess there's a Twitter account. And John Orand sends it to me as well. But, you know, we've all kind of wondered, well, what's the effect going to be? Well, everybody got super excited about Arizona being sold out, all, you know, Skins fans. Week two, different because the Buffalo fans had bought up the tickets. The television ratings have not been super impressive locally. They're better than they've been recently, but this past week, the game did a 14-something. As a comparison with the team they played, all right, so Washington was, I think, 32 teams. So it was like 23rd or 22nd in the league in local television ratings with a 14-something rating. Okay, the week before they did a 17-something, which was the highest we've seen around here in a while. Last week it was a 14. Now, the game was a blowout, too. Okay, so people probably tuned out when the game got out of hand. But as a comparison, Buffalo, locally television for this game, did a 42 rating. You know, so they beat us 37-3 on the scoreboard and 42-14 in local television ratings. And understand, and Tommy will say this, it's not all about television ratings anymore because of streaming and the way people consume things. I understand that. But it is still a much bigger reflection of interest than is attendance at a game.
I know, but that's an unfair comparison. I mean, what are your options in Buffalo? Okay. You know?
Well, true, but also because they have a winning team. This is a team that's been a contender. Yeah.
I know that, but they have a passionate fan base in part because they have limited things to be passionate about in Buffalo. There's lots of options in Washington, D.C.
I know. It's not – Western New York's never been one of my favorites. I used to have to go years ago, Rochester, Buffalo, and Syracuse – and here's where you don't want that. You don't want to be in those places, although I love snow, but you don't want to really be in those places from about November until June, almost.
No, you don't.
But it's, you know, it's
where they get 180 inches of snow up there.
It's a hearty group of people, and they're very nice people, and they're big time sports fans. They love their Bills. So far, like everybody said, well, everybody's going to be back. Everybody's not back, okay? So that is why I was reminded when you were asking me how I felt. It was more about my prediction and my gut feeling that they would win and wanting to be right. But I also want them to be right professionally. And, yes, I feel differently about the team today than I did 6 months ago. But the idea that everybody was coming back when Dan sold the team, because we know there are other factors, okay? The name's one of them. The television ratings aren't back into the, you know, high 20s and low 30s, you know, like Philadelphia and their market. Better town, right, Tommy? Much better town than Buffalo they did a 20.
Much more, absolutely.
They did a 29 local rating for, you know, for their home team. Baltimore in their game did a 24 local rating, 10 points higher than Washington. Washington, you know, is still in that bottom third in local television ratings through the first three games of the year, roughly. No, this is a team 10 years ago, you know, 8 years ago, were doing, you know, 20s and a playoff game in the 30s. Playoff game in 2012 after the 2012 season that did a 50 locally. All right, half the television sets were tuned in to a football game between Seattle and Washington, a very infamous football game, as you recall. Those are playoff games, not week three. It'll come back. They have to play better than they did Sunday. That's for sure. I think they will play better than they did Sunday. We're going to get Tommy's prediction coming up here shortly. Anyway, I want to tell you real quickly before we get to the rest of the show about what MyBookie is offering all of you. They called me last week. They said, so Washington's 2-0 for the first time in 12 years. I said, yes, we'd like to do something. And they threw out a 110% deposit match on your first deposit. This is an unheard of offer in sports books out there. They're basically more than doubling your money before you even have to place a bet. So if you open up an account at MyBookie using my promo code KevinDC, with $100, they're going to put an additional $110 into your account. So you'll have $210 in your account, not $100. You can go all the way up to $1,000. So if you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,100 in cash to bet with. So you'll have $2,100 in your account. This isn't something that's normal. You're not going to find an offer like this. If you're already playing somewhere else, who cares? Open up an account right now at MyBookie. MyBookie.ag. Use my promo code KevinDC. You're not going to find this offer on their website. You have to use my promo code KevinDC to qualify for this. So you're going to get all that free money, and then you'll have another place to bet. You'll have another place to compare point spreads and totals and money lines. Washington right now, an 8-point underdog against Philadelphia. What if you like Washington and your site has Philadelphia minus 7? Wouldn't you rather get it at plus 8? Have MyBookie as a fallback if you've already got a spot where you're wagering, not to mention free money. If you don't have a spot, MyBookie is one of the best. All right, fair point spreads, fair money lines, fair totals, fair pricing. They don't gouge you on losses. A lot of these places do. MyBookie's biggest welcome offer ever is for my podcast audience. 110% deposit match on your first deposit. Go to mybookie.ag. Use my promo code KevinDC to claim the bonus. You have to do it before the week is up. This offer is only available to my listeners this week. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC. Now, we'll be back after a few more words from a few of our other sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, Tommy, tell us about Shelly's.
Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but there have been some activity about Shelly's back room, on, at least on my Twitter account. I've got a tweet from the account Sheehan's Bible, you know, Kevinisms, one of your many devoted fans, who tweeted, "Always a good night at Shelly's back room. Eagles at their worst are better, pretty much better than any other NFC team." And with a picture of a beer and a cigar in an ashtray at Shelly's back room. So he was,
that's nice.
He was taking a picture of a team.
I know him. I met him. I met him at the bullpen for the celebration. He was very nice. And Yes, he's got that Twitter account. But a very nice guy. So that's great. He's at Shelley's. He enjoyed it.
He was at Shelley's. And I had another guy who was at Shelley's and had the menu in front of him and wanted to know what I would recommend to eat. And, you know, I mean, I'm a bad guy to ask for food recommendations because I have a limited palate.
Right.
You know? As opposed to a man of the world like you.
Yeah, right.
Who,
sure.
You know, who will eat different things. I mean, it's my simplicity that makes me complicated. So I told him that. I said, you know, I like the chicken tenders, but any burger that you get there will do. And pretty much you can't go wrong with anything on the menu. They have a lot of great food selections there. So, you know, we're getting response from the people who listen to this podcast are going to Shelley's back room and having their own great experience there as well. And that means they'll be back. Because if you go to Shelley's once, I guarantee you'll be back. Because you'll say to yourself, man, why haven't I been here before? That's what Shelley's back room does. It draws you in like smoke coming from a cigar. Shelley's back room, 1331 F Street Northwest. You can find out more at shelleysbackroom.com.
We love Shelley's, and we love their support of this podcast. And if you have interest, by the way, in supporting this podcast and you want to be an advertiser, just reach out through the website, which has at thekevinsheehanshow.com, and you can just email me directly. Speaking of emails and reviews and things like that, don't forget to rate us and review us on Apple and Spotify. 5 stars is always great on Apple, along with a 1 to 2 sentence review. This from Shelby. Shelby, it looks like, is from North Carolina. And by the way, there is a Shelby, North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken, Tommy, right? Isn't there a Shelby, North Carolina? Some North Carolina Tar Heel. Is David Thompson from Shelby, North Carolina? Hold on, I'm looking that
up. I don't know. Yeah, ask me about 6 questions I don't know at once.
Shelby,
okay?
North Carolina, I got it right. David Thompson,
okay,
from Shelby, North Carolina. So Shelby from North Carolina says, I'm a fan from way back in the Sports Fix days. Can Tommy be on with you more than just Tuesday and Thursday? Thank you very much. And by the way, Shelby gave us 5 stars. I love when Tommy's on with me whenever, but it is important, Shelby, for you to understand, Tommy would not be doing this for free. Tommy is my co-host for 2 days of the week. But when you're a co-host, you don't do it for free. Nobody would do it for free. I'm not suggesting that Tommy should do it for free. But we do have, we are very cost conscious on this show. We have a budget each year, and Tommy gets expensive. But that would not really necessarily be the reason. 2 days, we started with 2 days, and I don't even know why we started with 2 days. You were busy. You had your column, and we just decided, remember at Chadwick's when we were first doing the first podcast at Tony's studio?
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do you want to do? How do you want to do it? And we just, for whatever reason, we settled on, let's have you on 2 days a week. And at the time, Cooley was planning on doing like more than 2 days a week. And I think that that was part of the overall too, I think. But yes, I love doing Tuesdays and Thursdays.
You know what? It's worked out just fine so far.
You know, you paid me sort of a compliment last segment, something that you forgot to do on Tuesday. Did I forget to pay you a compliment? What was your final score prediction of Buffalo, Washington?
Oh, I think it was 35-23.
Oh, 35-23. Okay, for whatever reason,
I expected much more offense out of the Eric Bieniemy high-powered offense than they generated.
I wasn't
in the ballpark.
Okay, I had 31-14. I thought it might have been 35-23. I should probably write these things down. All right, I'll tell you what. With that, perfect segue into. So, what's your pick?
Well, I like the Varsity again this week, the Eagles, by a lot, 35-13. You know, normally you would use pass completions and touchdown passes to measure a quarterback. But I think the measuring stick has changed in Washington a little bit after last week. So I'm going to say only 6 sacks of Sam Howell this week and only 2 interceptions.
How many of the 6 sacks will be Sam's F-A-U-L-T?
Oh, my God. They're all my fault. I'm responsible.
35-13, Philadelphia. I'll have my prediction tomorrow, but I got to tell you.
No, 35-19.
35-19, excuse
35-19.
Me. 35-19. Yes. For some strange reason, I feel like they're going to play well Sunday. They're going to bounce back off of this hideous effort. I don't think they're a bad football team. Now, if the quarterback turns out to be bad, they're going to be a bad football team. They're going to take their lumps. They're going to win the games like they won against, you know, the JV, but they're going to struggle against the varsity.
Well, you understand. You understand, even if they are not fundamentally a bad football team, there is a particular mixture in the formula here that can keep a good football team from playing well, and that's a poor offensive line against a tremendous pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
They might be good, but they don't get a chance to show it.
Yeah, but then you got to put it on the OC. You can't take 9. Like I said to you on Tuesday, if you take 9 sacks again, that's next week. Next week, it's going to be hard to just answer. We collectively are trying to drag our asses over the finish line, and I love that about our team. Because an offensive coordinator should be able to scheme up something to stop a quarterback from being sacked 9 times in consecutive weeks. The easiest way to do it is to hand the ball off and punt if you have to, because you can't get sacked if you don't drop them back. But there are obviously many other ways to do it. So if something like that happens, I will be in here Monday, and Eric Bieniemy is going to be he's going to be in the spotlight at that point. He was so good against Denver, and last week not so much.
Yes.
That's what we've had here. We've had an up and down with the OC. We've had an up and down with the quarterback. So it would be, if we're going up and down, this would be the week to be up. More on that tomorrow. So, Tommy, did you see the news about the Office reboot?
No.
Yeah, lots of...
They're not going through with one, are they?
Well, lots of reporting that Greg Daniels, who was the showrunner, they call him showrunners. You would know that.
Yes.
They call the people that run these shows are called showrunners, that Greg Daniels is trying to put together an Office reboot. So how do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, since it's the same people, I mean, Greg Daniels, you know, was one of the guys from the original show. Generally, I don't like these things. I don't like reboots. I don't like remakes. You know, like when The Longest Yard is on my guide on TV.
Yeah.
And it drives me crazy when I see it's the Adam Sandler
instead of Burt
Longest
Reynolds.
Yard.
Yeah.
Instead of the Burt Reynolds one. You know, same with the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. If it's the Denzel one instead of the Walter Matthau one, I say, why would they even bother to screw with greatness? So generally, I'm not in favor of these because I don't think they work most of the time. So I'm not in favor of it, but I'm curious, since it's the same creators from, it's the same producers from the original Office here in America.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of this either. I don't, like you said, why mess with perfection? It was perfection, 9 seasons of perfection, and really season 9 was not great. You and I both think that James Spader in season 8, as Robert California,
yes,
was very underrated from even by most
Absolutely.
Office fans. I mean, first of all, you can't do it if Steve Carell's not going to do it. If Michael Scott's not back, you can't do an Office reboot. I have zero interest in that if he's not on it. And then beyond that, you've got to have Dwight back. You've got to have Rainn Wilson back. And you've got to have Jim and Pam back. I mean, like, you've got to have the key members of the height of that show back if it's going to have any shot at succeeding. And I'm sure there'd be a lot of money in this, but there's zero sense in doing this without Steve Carell. Zero.
Is this going to be a network show, do you know, or is this like a cable streaming show, like an Amazon Prime or something like that?
I don't know that that's even out there, because it's
okay.
You know, I guess it's first got to be created, and then they got to sell it although I don't know, would NBC or Netflix or Peacock? Peacock would probably have the rights to a reboot, I would imagine.
Yes, they would. They probably would. I don't think you need to have everybody from that group back. You're not going to get Jim back. He's out there directing movies.
Apparently, he's the one that actually would be up for it. He and Mindy Kaling,
really?
I think, both weighed in to say they would definitely consider it.
Oh, that's good news, because he's carved himself out a nice career. He does the Jack Ryan series,
Quiet movies,
and
Quiet Place
and,
movies.
He's directed a couple of big science fiction horror movies that have done well. So that's good. That would be good.
Yeah, and if he comes back, then of course Jenna Fischer has to come back. I mean, you can't have him back.
What if they're divorced?
I guess that's possible. Well, then you could have her and not have him, if you're going to do it that way. But to me, the bottom line is you've got to have Michael Scott and Dwight Schrute back. You can't have a show without the two of them.
I would agree.
So, I don't know. I mean, then again, I was the guy that didn't watch it because I said, well, they can never, ever recreate the BBC version, the Ricky Gervais version. This is going to be a joke. And I steered clear of it for probably, 8 years, 9 years, whatever it was. And then I started to watch it and I'm like, it's really good. You've given your prediction. We've talked about the Office reboot. We're going to finish up the show.
I want to talk about Brooks.
We're going to finish up the show with Brooks Robinson and something I would like us to do every Thursday, especially during football season. It doesn't have to just be during football season. I want us to resuscitate one of our favorite segments from the Sports Fix. You heard it here first. Bold predictions for the upcoming weekend, or it could be beyond this weekend. But we'll each have one when we come back after these words from a few of our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. Window Nation's got a great deal going on right now. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. First things first, mention my name and you'll get a free estimate. You don't have to do anything with that estimate. You can hold on to it for a while. You can shop it. They're not going to pressure you. They're not going to give you like an immediate, you've got to turn it around in 3 days or this deal goes away. They work with everybody that listens to this podcast. They're going to take good care of you. Right now, no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 years. Plus, get 50% off all style windows. Bow, bay, double hung, any style. You'll save up to 30% on your energy bills. Your home will look much better. And for 2 years, you will not have paid a penny yet for the windows. Window Nation has installed over 2 million windows, 96% of them without any follow-up service required. Their average installer averages 16 years of experience with over 20,000 windows installed. I've trusted them Everybody that's listened, that's used them, has trusted them. I've had family members that have used WinDonation. For 14 years, I've been an endorser of WinDonation. I've got complete trust in them. You can as well. 866-90-NATION or WinDonation.com. Tommy, give me a little bit on Brooks Robinson, who passed away the other day at 86 years old.
Well, I've never met in my life a celebrity / athlete as warm and friendly and as human as Brooks Robinson was. I mean, it's hard to describe. You can't overstate what a decent human being this guy was to everybody he met. I mean, there's so many people in Baltimore that have Brooks Robinson stories. You know, signing this autograph, saying hi to their kids at dinner. Just so many stories like that. He was always so gracious to me whenever I talked to him and dealt with him. And the Orioles announced on Monday they're going to open up the ballpark for a commemorative event. They're going to honor Brooks. They think they'll be guest speakers and things like that on Monday. What's interesting, though, as an interesting aside, okay, because I knew Brooks, and he talked to me about this once. The Orioles in recent years, ever since they started losing 100 games a year before they got good, really went out of their way to embrace their alumni. And in order to do that, they had to repair their relationship with Brooks, because for years, it was a damaged relationship.
Why?
Back in 2005, they wanted to honor Brooks' 50th anniversary of his major league debut, and Brooks refused to go. There was a dispute. Brooks had been running a fantasy camp, a Brooks Robinson fantasy camp, and apparently he was using some kind of Orioles uniforms, maybe, in that, and the Orioles shut it down. And Brooks was extremely bitter about that and wanted to have nothing to do with the team for at least 10, 12 years. And then when it became in the Orioles' best interest to repair that, they did. To their credit, they have. They've opened up. There's a lot of great relations with alumni back there now. A lot of great old Orioles show up. On Friday night, they're going to honor Jim Palmer for his 60 years with the organization as a pitcher and as a broadcaster. Boog Powell will be there signing autographs. But it wasn't always that way with Brooks. They repaired it eventually, and in the last few years, he had a good relationship with the team. But like so many things the Orioles did over the years, they had managed to alienate Brooks Robinson for a time, which nobody thought was possible.
Right. Well, I mean,
and also, yeah. I wanted to just let some people know my column tomorrow is an interview with Davey Johnson, who was one of Brooks' teammates, about his time playing with Brooks.
Oh,
now,
that'll be good.
And Davey said, talked about this. Now it's just Davey, Palmer, and Boog Powell from that great 66 Orioles World Series team. Those are the only ones that are left.
And that was the team that beat the Dodgers, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you'll be able to read that on WashingtonTimes.com. Click on sports with Davey Johnson's memories of Brooks Robinson.
I don't really remember Brooks Robinson. I do remember certainly the Orioles teams of the early 70s. I mean, I was not an Orioles fan. I remember the last Senators team. I've told you that before. My father took me to see Denny McClain pitch his first game as a Washington Senator in 1971, and I distinctly remember that, and I've told this story many times. One of the reasons is we came back out after the game, and the car wasn't where we parked it because it had been stolen. I can't tell you that I remember Brooks Robinson, but I know the legend he was and the defensive gem that he was, considered to be perhaps the greatest third baseman from a defensive standpoint ever. I think Mike Schmidt is always considered, you know, all around the best third baseman that's ever lived. Right, Tommy?
Well, because of his power numbers, yeah. Over 500 career home runs. Brooks won 16 gold gloves, consecutive gold gloves.
Amazing.
I mean, that's just stunning. A stunning number. At one time, the Orioles had Brooks at third, Luis Aparicio, who won 9 gold gloves at short, and then after that, Mark Belanger, who won 8 gold gloves, and then Davey Johnson at second, who won 3 gold gloves. Imagine that infield, you know, with those guys. I mean, the Orioles, after the Yankees' demise, you know, after 1965, and once the player draft went in, once the MLB draft started, and the Yankees just couldn't buy players anymore, and in like 65, the Orioles were the gold standard.
Yeah, they were.
Baseball for like 15 years. You know, they were the best organization in the sport from 66 to 83.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. 66, they won the World Series. They missed the playoffs the next 2 years. Then in 69, they won 109 games. They lost in the World Series. In 1970, they won 108 games and won the World Series. That was the one where Brooks Robinson was the MVP and they beat the Reds, right?
Yes.
And then the next year, tell me if I'm wrong here, they won 101 games and lost the World Series. Was it to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and 7 games to Roberto Clemente and the Pirates.
Yeah. Then they missed the playoffs, made the playoffs through 74. And then in 79, that was the Pittsburgh Pirates, We Are Family. I remember that World Series very much.
Yes.
I remember it snowed like in game 1 in Baltimore, or maybe that was game 7 in Baltimore. I forget. Game 7 was in Baltimore, I'm pretty sure, when Pittsburgh won with Willie Stargell, et cetera. And then they won it with Cal Ripken and company in 1983, beating the Phillies.
Yeah.
In 5 games, I think it was.
And haven't
been back since, but maybe this year.
I think this year they may have a shot. They are good.
Yeah.
They are loaded with talent.
They are loaded, that's for sure. It'll be fun to watch them in the postseason. All right, let's get to something we used to do a long time ago. You heard it here first.
I've been waiting to hear what the big announcement was going to be, and you got it right here.
Heard it here first.
Thank you, John Krasinski and Michael Kelly, for cutting that open for us. So Tommy and I, for the 7.5 years that we did a radio show together, each week we did a segment called You Heard It Here First. And it was just any sort of bold prediction that we had for typically the upcoming weekend. We would do it later in the week. Sometimes it was a bold prediction that went beyond the weekend. I do remember my bold prediction that Washington would draft Kirk Cousins from Michigan State in next year's draft. I did give that out in 2011, and it happened. I was a Kirk fan even when he was at Michigan State. But anyway, it's a bold prediction for the week. We will try to remember to do this every Thursday. So, Tommy, what's your bold prediction for the week?
This is bold, baby. Bold with a capital B. During the Eagles game in Philly on Sunday, Ron Rivera and Eric Bieniemy are going to get into a sideline argument and have to be separated.
Oh, God.
That's my bold prediction.
I actually thought when you started that, you were going to predict something that I suggested today to Merrill Reese. You know, the longtime Eagles play-by-play voice was on with me on radio.
Right.
Such a really nice guy. You know, the Chiefs play at the Meadowlands Sunday night against the Jets. Travis Kelce's mom will be at the Eagles game at 1:00 to see her son, Jason Kelce, the Eagles center. I wonder if she'll bring Travis's new girlfriend with her. What if Taylor's up in a suite with Mrs. Kelce watching Ron Rivera and Eric Bieniemy get into this brawl on the sideline? That would be something.
What new girlfriend?
You know what? I am tired of it. Like, I don't want to see every time I watch the Chiefs, I don't want to see every every three plays a cutaway to Taylor Swift. We don't have to see that the rest of the year, do we?
Actually, I'm kind of enjoying it. I'm enjoying it from a sports media professor's point of view to see this marriage between the NFL and this marketing force that's Taylor Swift and see how it unfolds. So I am curious about how, you know, we talk about it in the class I teach and stuff like that. And again, I want to teach you for, thank you for speaking to our class last Thursday night, our sports business media class. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Anytime you want me.
You were a big hit.
So I've got a bold prediction, and it wasn't that Taylor Swift was going to be at the Eagles game. My bold prediction is the Cowboys are going to lose to the Patriots Sunday. And that'll drop them to 2-2 if they lose, if I'm right. And then they have San Francisco and the Chargers on the road in their next two games. The Cowboys losing to the Cardinals really makes this game against the Patriots for Dallas here early in the season not must win, but a serious need to have win. Because I don't know, maybe they can go out to San Francisco and win, and maybe they can beat the Chargers in L.A. They'll be underdogs in both of those games more likely than not. And the Patriots are much better than people understand. They are super good defensively, and they can run the football. And last week, Arizona ran it right down Dallas's throats. Yeah, the Patriots more likely than not are going to be in the smell test tomorrow. That line is at 6.5, and the world is betting Dallas Sunday. That's my bold prediction for the week. I wanted to just read real quickly this story that I read right before the show started. Cooley and I talked yesterday about how much we both like Deion Sanders. I love what Deion Sanders said. I played it at the end of the show about his 5-star cornerback recruit. And that he's old school. This is the thing about Deion. There's lots of flash, there's lots of hype, but he is an old school coach who really does, I think, care about his players. Tommy, I don't know if you heard this, but he essentially was asked about this 5-star corner that had flipped his recruit from Miami to Colorado, had not played yet in a game. And Deion was asked last week, and he said, well, it's up to him. So 2 days ago, he was asked, well, what does that mean? And he said, he's got to study and prepare. He's got to watch film. He's got to show up for the film meetings. He said, I know how much film my players are watching. I'd be a fool to play these people that aren't watching film. And there's something about Deion that I like a lot. But here's the story from today. So I don't know how much you know about Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter may be the best all-around player in college football. It's very possible.
Yeah, he's a Colorado two-way player.
Exactly. And he took a bit of a cheap shot from Colorado State defensive back Henry Blackburn in that unbelievable game now, you know, a week and a half ago. And Henry Blackburn's been getting death threats. It's been out of control. Deion, you know, in the media last week said, none of that from Colorado people. This is just a game, the whole thing. So here's the story written just a little while ago. Colorado two-way star Travis Hunter isn't holding a grudge against the player whose hit sent him to the hospital and cost him at least two games. Hunter and Colorado State defensive back Henry Blackburn met Wednesday and went bowling together. Hunter suffered the lacerated liver on the late hit by Blackburn. He was flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct. He was taken to the hospital. Hunter was treated and released. Blackburn and his family received death threats during and after the game as a result of the hit. His campus address, the home address, his parents' address, and phone numbers were all published online, and Colorado coach Deion Sanders condemned the threats. Hunter and Blackburn connected shortly after the game, and Hunter invited Blackburn back to Boulder, where Blackburn grew up and attended high school. Colorado State defensive back Ron Harge III, whose brother Isaiah plays for Colorado, helped the two players connect. Their Wednesday meeting at their bowling get-together will be a part of an upcoming video for Hunter's YouTube channel, which has 252,000 subscribers. Both players are going to donate money for their bowling game to the charity, which of their choice, which will receive proceeds. That's a nice story. That is a nice story for this day and age.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It refused to let the poison that is social media basically degenerate into something far worse. That's a very nice story.
It really speaks highly of Travis Hunter, and I bet to a certain degree it speaks highly of Deion Sanders, because it wouldn't surprise me if this was something he supported and was involved in. But the fact that these two are going to get together and Travis Hunter realized what this guy was going through because of this late hit, tremendous story. All right, you have anything else?
I got nothing else for you today, boss.
Nor do I. I'll be back tomorrow. Jay Gruden will be on the show. I'll have Washington wins if, smell test picks, and my pick on the Washington-Philadelphia game. Have a good day.
I am not a bad guy. I am a good guy who runs over women with his car.
Sorry, that was so good, damn it.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.